wish I was an armadillo on Highway 40 west of Amarillo, dodging cars and eating bugs until I see the morning sun. Then I'll find a hole and crawl down in it. I'll be sleeping in a New York minute. When it's dark, I will begin again. It's an armadillo's life for me.
Good morning and welcome to the Pensacola Expert Panel. I am Jess. This is News Radio Pensacola. Are you listening to The Garden Line? Call or text 850-437-1620. Thanks for joining me this morning, and a giant thanks for joining me today to Mike Wiggins.
Good morning. Okay, here's a question for all our listeners. You ready? Who would be in the studio and open the show with the armadillo song? Who would do that? Who would do that?
Who would ever do
that? Who would ever do that? But Jenna's back.
Like.
Jenna is back. Jenna, welcome.
Good morning.
We've missed you.
Oh, very sweet. We do love our friends here at the Garden Line, and of course you, Mike. Always love running into you around town when I'm here and there.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, usually at the post office, because I still go to the post office.
Well, I'm kind of old school. I do too.
Yes, I'm okay with that. I've been back for a little while now, helping out our friend Jess, who's getting really comfortable and doing a great job behind the board here on Pep Talk, and of course. I couldn't miss a Garden Line day.
I am so glad you're here. And I know our listeners are just excited to hear your voice.
Yeah.
I'm excited to hear your voice.
We're excited to hear their voice.
Exactly.
So please,
and
call
Jess,
in.
To you. Welcome to you to the Garden Line.
Well, thank you. I've been looking forward to meeting you in person. Last week, the Garden Line was wonderful, but I heard that you are.
Don't tell me what you heard. None of that's true.
Well, we already have questions coming in.
Well, that is great. I was just going to say, before we start, Jess, since you and I have never done this before, we have got some of the greatest listeners ever. They call us all the time with their questions. They're all great questions, and we know the answer to most of them, so some we have to scramble a little bit, but... It is a fun show, and I really appreciate you being here. And, of course, there's Jenna over there. If I can't answer the question, I guarantee you Jenna can. So there you go.
Jenna is great.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And one thing about our show that's fun is I do have a few things to talk about, but none of that's important. What's important is what the questions that the folks ask, and we try to go there first.
Are you ready for the first question?
I'm ready as I can be.
This is great. I want to plant some bushes or trees on a property line backing up to a golf course. Would cedars be a decent option? If not, what would you recommend?
Great question. That is a great question. And I'll say the cedars are not a bad choice. And if you want to see how well they do, go out to Roger Scott Tennis Center over off of Langley, and not Langley, on Summit. And you'll see they have put kind of as a way to protect the view of the tennis courts. You don't need people stopping and watching the tennis. And they're beautiful. They've been in there now maybe, 4 to 5 years, 20, 30 feet tall, total screening. It's really, it really works for them. There are other things that one can use, though. One I think is kind of a Pensacola basic is just ligustrum. Ligustrum is just nothing special about it. It's a green plant, has some white blooms in the spring. It makes everybody sneeze, but it's really a pretty plant, and it'll grow. It's not going to grow that fast. It's going to take a matter of years before it gives you the screening you're looking for. But ligustrum is good. And here's one more that I really like. We don't use much here in residential landscaping is iliagnus. The Department of Transportation uses a lot of it in the center medians. It's kind of got a gray look to it on the leaf, looks kind of like salt and pepper, if you will. It will grow so fast, and it'll take over. It'll send out these big long arms, these big long limbs, and you have to kind of keep that pruned off if you want to, or you can just let them go. But they are very hardy. Nothing gets to them.
Is it a plant that's easy to keep pruned, but it doesn't, you know, sometimes when you
It's easy to keep pruned, but you're going to have to, you can almost watch it grow. I mean, it really is fast. But Iliagnus is a choice. The ligustrum is kind of a basic Pensacola plant, but the cedars will work. They really will. And you need to, they're different varieties. You go to your nurseryman and see what he's got in stock and drive by a Roger Scott Tennis Center and look at that planting and see if that's kind of what you're looking for. So, great question. I appreciate it.
You know, I have a new home. Oh. I think I like my neighbors so far. But if I was going to put something up to kind of divide the property and have a little bit of privacy where my patio is, I wouldn't know what to put up.
Oh, yeah. Well, the ones we just talked about would work for you. One that's a little slower growing but is a real pretty hedge, if you will, if you're going to divide properties, is Clearia japonica. Clearia japonica has got kind of a reddish leaf to it, reddish green leaf. Clearia japonica kind of has taken the place of red top. Red top was a basic Pensacola hedge plant over the years, but it developed a disease. Red top is technically a photinia, and it developed, for lack of a better word, photinia leaf spot. And it literally destroyed the whole red top population in Northwest Florida. The growers don't even grow it anymore. And it was no chemical that would really solve it. But the Clearia is a little slower growing than the red top, but it's a nice slow hedge. Let me give you one more, just a little bit radical. Some people are planting blueberry hedges. You know, you grow blueberries to eat, of course, but they are really an attractive plant. It's going to be probably a little lower, but by the same token, it's a good little hedge plant if you want something a little different.
How tall would you say that a blueberry?
Oh, I think they'll get up good, you know, 4 to 5 feet probably after a while, but you may want to kind of keep them pruned to, I'd say, 3 to 4.
Okay, so a little bit shorter than myself.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Absolutely. Absolutely.
That is great. You were listening to the Pensacola Expert Panel. Hit us in the text line. Give us a call at 850-437-1620. We have a great expert here with us today, Mike.
Very good. One thing we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, and Jenna will remember this, because she and I talked about this all the time, in this extreme heat, there's so many things that we need to do and things we don't need to do. Just one of the things we don't need to do is to try to get out there, work in your flower bed, work in your landscaping, middle of the day. We've got to protect ourselves because this is so hot. Now, we'll get a break in this later on, but for now, be very, very careful out there. The other thing we need to do is watch our water. We can talk a little bit more about that today, but if you have container plants, you know, because I've experienced it myself, they dry out almost overnight in this heat. And there's some things that really are not surviving this heat. What we need is a good stretch of rain because we are very, very dry. Supposedly we're going to get some thunderstorms this week. But the big message here, Jess, is that we need to protect ourselves and only work out in that yard, maybe early morning. I found the other day I got out about 7 o'clock and mowed the lawn. Woke up every neighbor I had, but they understand because they were getting ready to do it too. But you get out that time of day, you can, it's okay. But you try to get out there at noon and mow that lawn. Oh my goodness.
We're going to take a real quick break. Get your questions ready for us, 850-437-1620.
Express yourself. Express yourself.
Welcome back to the Pensacola Expert Panel. I'm Jess. This is News Radio Pensacola. You're listening to The Garden Line with Mike.
How we doing, Jess?
We're doing fabulous.
Doing okay. I think you're doing great.
Thank you. It's beautiful out. So when you look behind me, you can see all the beauty.
I look out there all the time. Look at that. Our crepe myrtle in the parking lot is just going crazy. It's beautiful. It really is. While we're looking at that crepe myrtle in the parking lot, Jess, I had a friend yesterday ask me if that gets peely bark on it, some of the varieties, would it hurt it to peel that bark off? Because they like that smooth look. I said, no, I don't think that would hurt a thing if you wanted to. You hardly can hurt crepe myrtles. They're going to grow in spite of you. But that's why we grow them, is that color in the summer when we're spending a lot of time outside. Now, in this heat, we may not be spending quite as much time outside, but that's why we have crepe myrtles. I had an old friend of mine who wanted to make Pensacola the crepe myrtle capital of the South, and he did a pretty good job of it. Pretty good job.
I like that.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, a couple things here. This is July, and there is a couple of yard chores that we need to do. It is time, Jess, to fertilize St. Augustine and zoysia grass. I know it's hot. I know it's burning up out there. But both of those particular lawns like a little summer kick, if you will. Now, here's what I would do. If you have if you have St. Augustine and zoysia, I would use the same fertilizer I used in the spring. We always talk about fertilizer formulas here, Jess. They all have three numbers. I like a 1608, but there are different varieties you can buy at different garden centers around town. But you do want a lot of nitrogen on it. That's going to give it that kick. That's the first number, and that's when a 1608 is 16% nitrogen. Anyway, that's what you want to use. I did mention 2 weeks ago about a friend of mine who lives at the beach, around Sabine Bay, if you will. And he uses a high nitrogen fertilizer called ammonium nitrate.
Sounds official.
Oh, it is strong. We like the 1648 because you can buy it at very slow release. The ammonium nitrate is 3300, and ain't nothing slow release about it. It'll just give it a quick kick. It can be the best thing you ever did or the worst thing you ever did, because you put it on too heavy, it'll burn up your lawn. I don't really recommend it. I would recommend that 1608. It's safe. It works. That's exactly what I would do. But people do put on some really higher nitrogen on that grass. Now, if you've got centipede grass is kind of a basic here in Pensacola. We have three basic kinds, Jess. We have St. Augustine, centipede, zoysia. Those are the three big grasses here. Centipede's kind of a native grass, and it really doesn't like that summertime kick. What it likes is a little organic material, a little bit of iron, something on that order. And so if you can use, there are two products that are good for that. One is ironite, which is a granular iron, which greens it up. And the other one is milorganite, which is a organic material, which acts slower, but it will do the same thing. Yeah, okay, and this all fits our current events, too. You know where milorganite comes from?
I do not.
Jess, come on.
I mean, I could be just saying that I don't know.
Okay, I'll give you a hint. How about the Republican Convention?
Milwaukee.
Milorganite. That's what the M-I-L is.
Okay.
Exactly. It does come out of the Milwaukee sewage system, and it's nothing new. It's been around for years, but it's a great organic fertilizer. So it's called milorganite. So if you have centipede grass, that's a good place to go, is to use milorganite or use the ironite. Either one would be good for midsummer. But quite frankly, to be honest with you, personal opinion, if you're busy, if it's too hot to get out in the yard, and you just forgot to put that fertilizer on centipede middle of the summer, you're not really going to lose much, because centipede just doesn't need that many nutrients. I mean, that ironite and milorganite will help it, but it's not critical. What's critical is coming up in the month of September, even October, we have a special fertilizer. It's called a winterizer. We won't go there today, but that's what you will kind of save yourself for.
Excellent.
On the centipede grass. So anyway, so we've got to fertilize our Osoja and St. Augustine, and this is the time. This is the time to do it, no doubt about it.
All right, we have a few more questions in the text line. Thank you so much. If you're thinking about sending us a question, 850-437-1620. One of the questions from Joseph is,
Joseph, all right.
Joseph, I want to relocate my elephant ears, but the place I want to relocate them to is not ready yet. Can I transplant them into pots and bring them into the house temporarily?
This time of year in this heat, that could be a little dicey if you do that. Now, Joseph, if you can wait, obviously, those elephant ears, you know, as in the wintertime, are going to going to be nothing. You won't even be able to see them. It's all the bulb that's under the ground. And that, of course, would be the time to do it. But if you've got to move them now, if you have to, I'd be tempted to go ahead and dig them up, put them in a pot, maybe cut them back, keep them in the same general type of environment that they're in now. A lot of water, bigger the pot, the better, and see if that doesn't work. It probably will, but those bulbs grow out and really get very large under the ground. And so digging them up and moving them could be a little dicey. But if you have to do it, that's how I would try it. Put it in a good potting soil in a couple of large pots and have a go at it. But if you can wait, January, February, in my opinion, would be the best time to do it. But I have to tell you this, Joseph, you've got some great plants. The elephant ears this year, I was going to say in my yard, I think in all of Pensacola, have been absolutely gorgeous. We talk about the two types of elephant ears. One is the traditional type that kind of falls over, if you will, and the leaf is kind of parallel to the ground. And then you've got the one that grows straight up. That's kind of it's new to me over the last couple of years. And I'll tell you, that is a great way to plant elephant ears. And we always tell our listeners, I'm sure they're tired of me saying this, there's a company called Caladiums Florida down in Lake Placid, Florida, that deals with elephant ears and caladiums only, those two, online. Caladiums Florida. And that's exactly what you need to do.
Great. We have a few more questions. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back with Mike, 850-437-1620. Welcome back to Pensacola Expert Panel with Mike Wiggins today in the Garden Line. Mike, we have a couple of questions coming up, but I'm going to let you know what the question is in a few seconds here. I'm going to bring it up. But we're going to give you the question, and then we're going to shoot over to the newsroom real quick.
That sounds good to me.
My lantanas are not blooming. They are healthy and growing well, but no blooms.
Interesting question. We will address that when we come back. But I do have to say before we go to the news real quick how good it is to have you here, Jess, and to have Jenna over there working on some of the electronics, which I have no idea what she does, but there's nobody better.
Welcome back to the Pensacola Expert Panel. I'm Jess. We're listening to The Garden Line today with Mike. Now, we had a question before the break, Mike. Do you remember the question?
About lantana.
It is about lantanas.
Yeah, about their lantana was not blooming.
Correct.
But I'll have to tell you this, Jess. The hardest questions to answer on The Garden Line are, quote, why doesn't my XYZ plant bloom? Those are hard questions because lantana, for example, and I'm going to have to get personal here. I have got some dwarf yellow lantana, some in my front yard, some in my backyard. that are blooming their hearts out. Absolutely gorgeous. So I'm not sure why these lantana are not blooming. You've got to look at a couple of things. One, lantana wants a full, blaring, hot sun. That's one of the great perennial plants that we have in Pensacola that loves the heat, loves the sun, and they just do great. And they're different colorations of different blooms. It's a great plant to plant. Wintertime, they'll get knocked back, and you say, hey, that's nothing but a little root there. It's dead, but it's not. It'll come right back in the spring. Now, if theirs is not blooming, I would say, number one, obviously, be sure it's in the full sun. I have a feeling that it is. Be sure we haven't over-fertilized it. Sometimes that can result in blossom drop. Be sure that it's getting some water. Now, lantana, of all the plants we talk about, will handle drought pretty well. But any plant's got to have some type of irrigation. So that may be part of our problem. I would ask the question, I wish we had them on the phone, whether this plant, this lantana, has bloomed before. Could be a variety that, you know, may not be, maybe a little unusual and for whatever reason doesn't bloom as well as others. So, in any event, that's kind of my best shot at that, but I'm not sure why it stopped blooming. I think the biggest deal is irrigation and sunlight. And then from there, lantana is pretty automatic.
Now, we did have a question earlier. Somebody sent in a picture and was asking if you could help identify a plant on their property.
Well, yes, that's the one thing about the garden line is great. We have got this wonderful research department here that will help us with questions we can't answer. We looked at the picture and really couldn't figure out what it was. And our research department calls it an empress tree. I'll be quite frank with you, I'm not familiar with an empress tree, but we also learned when we looked it up that it's an invasive. It's invasive in other countries. So if it's invasive in other countries, you can almost be sure it's invasive in Florida. So that's kind of what that is. And it's very, very interesting. We appreciate them sending us that, and hopefully that helps you. An empress tree.
Great. We did have Lisa from Milton chime in, and she said, hello, Mike. Lantana needs to be pruned. They will bloom again and again.
There you go. It's just a great plant, and maybe that's what our caller needs to do is get out there and give it a little pruning and see if the new growth. I do have to say one thing, and Jenna, I'm going to include you in this if I could. You and I have done this show 1,000 times, and we've talked so many times with Lisa. I think what you missed from Lisa this year is her raised gardens. She got these, I call them tubs, like you animals would drink water out of.
Oh, nice.
And she planted, we have followed those plantings from day one.
Aww.
When she put them in, put the soil in, put the plants in, and now Lisa's backyard looks like a botanical garden.
Our friend Lisa from Milton.
Lisa from Milton.
Okay, I'll go in and look up her text thread. I want to look at it, Lisa. I'll make sure I don't miss out.
She is unbelievable what she has done.
She's one of our garden experts, too.
There's no question about it. She's a member of our research team.
She is. And by research team, he meant Jenna frantically Googling over here.
Oh, Jenna.
It's much more
complicated than that.
And then trying to guess how to say the Greek word for it, the Latin word for it. So we landed on empress tree. It does look like it is semi-invasive, but
it does
grow into kind of a cool, majestic
It does.
Plant.
It really does. But I'm not convinced that long-term it works
right
here in Northwest Florida.
It doesn't look like it would survive a winter
it
here.
It does not here. It really does not. Exactly.
Great.
What you got, Jess?
Great. We have about 3 or 4 more questions.
Oh,
so
good.
If you have a question, send it in 850-437-1620. This next question is from Georgia. I am planting sweet corn in my backyard. What type of fertilizer should I use?
Good question. Sweet corn likes a relatively high nitrogen fertilizer. I'm just going to put a formula out here you could use. For example, a 15-0-15 would probably work. Or even you could go old school and put out some 888 fertilizer. That might even be the best bit. That's what a lot of the farmers used to use. So yes, but it does like a little bit of nitrogen, maybe a lot more than some of your other vegetable plants. I wish we could ask her what kind of sweet corn she's planting. Is it yellow, white? Is it what's the name of it?
I will send her that text. But yeah, while she's listening, if Georgia, if you're listening to us, and I hope you are, you sent in a great question. Let us know what kind of sweet corn that you're growing. I do have another question. It says, "Good morning." Well, good morning. I miss which type of fertilizer to put on my St. Augustine. Can you repeat the type and how to apply it?
Of course. I like the 16-4-8 or a 16-0-8. Now, when you go to buy fertilizer, you'll see some that's higher nitrogen, like I'm going to sell like a 22-4-4. There are all these different varieties, but that higher nitrogen is what we want here in midsummer. So that's what you need to do. But it's a great question as far as how to apply it. Remember, we talked about that ammonium nitrate, which we really don't recommend. When you put that out, you're using only 3 pounds per 1,000 square feet. On the 16-0-8 or the 22-0-0, as long as it's slow release, contains iron, contains minor elements, if you go about 7 pounds per 1,000 square feet, that's pretty good. So you got to do a little bit of arithmetic to figure how many square feet you have. An average suburban front yard is probably 2,000 to 3,000 square feet. So if you're putting out a 16-0-8, you would put out about probably half a bag. But that may be a little much if you have a smaller yard, bigger yard. Just kind of do the math at about 7 pounds per 1,000 square feet. But that is assuming, let me say it again because it's so important, that the fertilizer you're putting out has slow release qualities to it. It's granular, it contains iron, and what it does, it has all these micronutrients in there. And the label will tell you that. You kind of got to get a magnifying glass to read that label. But that, you know, as we always say on the Garden Line, before you do anything, put out a weed killer, fungicide, fertilizer, take a few minutes and read that label, because it really is important, because sometimes you put things on too heavy, then you're going to have some damage to your lawn. Put it on too light, you've wasted your money. Gotcha. So anyway, that's kind of what you need to do.
Great. We're going to skip over to a break real soon, and we're going to hit back in the text line. I have a tremendous problem with torpedo grass. I will finish that question when we come right back.
Ooh.
I remember the days of just keep.
Welcome back to the Pensacola Expert Panel. You're listening to Garden Line with Mike. Now, Mike, we had a question come in just before the break. I have a tremendous problem with torpedo grass invading my beds and centipede lawn. What can I do about it in addition to digging up the roots?
It is absolutely the hardest weed to control. Now, Jess, did they say it was in their flower bed or in the lawn? I think flower bed is what they said. Is that correct?
Let me go back.
But in any event.
Invading my beds centipede lawn.
Okay, well, let's talk about the beds first. The only way I know to control torpedo grass is with what I call a non-selective herbicide, which is a weed killer that, in simple terms, kills everything. Over the years, what we've used is Roundup. And Roundup contained a chemical called glyphosate. Okay, well, they've taken Roundup off the market that contains glyphosate. A lot of lawsuits, a lot of problems. We've talked about that here on the Garden Line. But they have a new chemical that they have, which is now one that also kills everything, but doesn't supposedly sterilize the soil. That's the only way I know to control torpedo grass. And that would be in a flower bed or an area where you could spray it and it doesn't have any turf. Because if it's in your grass, digging it up is the only way to do it. And digging up torpedo grass, it's like the tops of it are green and there's a little, there's a kind of heavy duty stem on it. But underneath the ground, it's like a bowl of spaghetti. White roots that go everywhere. And as we all know, you leave any of those roots in there, it'll come right back up. So I don't really have a solution to kill torpedo grass that is in turf. However, if it's in a flower bed or in an area where you can spray and not get it on anything desirable between plants, if you will, I think the Roundup with the new formula, and ask your nurseryman now, you want the new formula, not the old formula of glyphosate. I wouldn't recommend that, no. But that's the way to do it. It's the toughest weed we have. It really is, and it's hard to control.
Great. One more question. Hi, Mike.
Hey.
My 40-plus year-old crepe myrtle is now sprouting new plants around the root base. If we dug those up, would it hurt the mother plant? What should I do with them?
Well, generally on crepe myrtles, of course, you'll get that growth from the base. Because crepe myrtle, I think if you really want to be technical about it, is really a shrub. And it grows up from the base very, very quickly. And most of us just keep those clipped off because we like the looks of the exposed trunk. Like the one out in the parking lot, Jess, if you look at it, they have to keep the growth from the very bottom of that clipped off, or it'll grow up 2-3 feet, and it's very unsightly. Now, insofar as digging up those sprouts coming out of the, you know, around it, I don't think that would hurt anything. Like I said earlier in the show, crepe myrtles are strong. They really are. I think I would try that. I'm going to be honest with you, though. I've never seen that done successfully, and so I don't know how you're going to do insofar as survivability is concerned. What I might recommend you do, if you're going to try that, is just wait till the winter when the crepe myrtle has no leaves, when it's dormant, and those shoots that you're trying to transplant are also dormant. That would be the best time to do it. I think doing it in this midsummer heat, I think that type of transplant would be very difficult to do.
I think there's two pluses to that. You'll stay cooler, and the plant will be more successful.
Jess, you're good at this. You got it, buddy.
I mean, I just pulled that one out of the air.
Very good.
If you have a question that you want to send into the Garden Line and get a wonderful answer from this wonderful expert, Mike, 850, he's shaking his head. No,
I'm shaking my head.
He knows that he's a wonderful expert. 850-437-1620.
One thing that those of us that have crepe myrtles tend to, not only do we have to keep the bottom of it clean so you see the trunks, but you'll know that new growth will come out all up and down those trunks. And maybe every month you just got to clip those off to keep that exposed multi-trunk look, which is really what you want.
Great. Now, I'm a new homeowner. I love flowers. But I'm a new Pensacolian, too.
Okay.
So what kind of plant would you suggest, maybe a hanging plant that I could do? We're going to take it simple.
You'll make it simple?
Yeah. What kind of a hardy, good hanging plant could I do?
Well, and you know, it's so funny. I mean, that's a very simple question. But you have to ask yourself a lot of other questions before you do it. Where are you going to hang this plant? Is it sun? Is it shade? Is it semi-sun? You could put a bougainvillea in it, which is going to be a full sun. You could put a Boston fern, which is kind of classic, but you don't want to put that in the full blaring sun. A lot of people like to put impatiens or even petunias in a hanging basket that will come down.
Impatience.
But you've got to watch where you put it, especially insofar as sun shade. And also, a hanging basket is just like a container plant. And in this heat and dry weather, it's almost a daily task to water it. And if you let it go, you're going to have some problems. And I think we're all showing, I would think, some plants in our yard that we count on, if you will, to be good looking during the growing season.
Hold that thought. Suffering. We're going to shoot over to a commercial real
Let's
quick.
Let's do it.
Welcome back to the Pensacola Expert Panel. This is Garden Line with Mike. Mike, we have an interesting comment. I think you're going to like this one. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Hey, it's Michael from the best side, the west side. Regarding the crepe myrtle, when the little shoots start to come up, put your weed whacker to work.
Hey, Michael, I know you're from the west side, which is the best side, but I don't recommend that. I think if you start using a weed eater near the trunks of any tree or any plant, you can break that initial layer along that bark, and you can have some major problems with your tree. Now, if you are real careful, as I know you are, you probably can get away with it. But for the most part, I would keep my weed eater away from plants and from trees. As a matter of fact, a lot of people have grass that grows right up to the crepe myrtle or to a pine tree or whatever, and they use a weed eater to control that. Well, sometimes it'll take a while. It may even take till next season. But you may be calling us back and say, my crepe myrtle's not doing so hot. It's using that weed eater and breaking that cambium layer on that tree. So I wouldn't do it. I'm kind of joking here, but I really wouldn't do it, Michael, unless you could be real, real careful.
We are closing out. This is the Pensacola Expert Panel. Thank you so much, Mike, for the Garden Line. Mike has a few words left. Go ahead.
I do have a few words. Yes. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you. Jenna, what a treat to have you here serving as our research assistant today.